miss a beat in today's fast-moving markets. Stay close to the action together with us. All episodes available at www.chartered-investment.com/podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of FUMS in 15 Minutes. My guest today is Daniel Liebau. Daniel is lecturer for digital platforms and fintech at ESSEC Business School and indeed founder of Lightbulb Capital. Daniel, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And hi from Singapore.
Thanks, Daniel. So our topic today should be the next operating system for funds. So from we call it tokenization from Asia to the world. And as our listeners are well aware, we jump right into the questions. So Dan, first question to you. If you had to explain tokenized funds and tokenized fund shares to a traditional fund manager in just a minute, what exactly changes and what do you see as fundamentally staying the same?
I think I'll start with the back end of your question. I think a lot of the legalities and the regulatory requirements will probably stay the same because in the end of the day, we're still talking about investment products. Now, where they are being recorded, that is obviously the big difference. And I think here is where there's also quite a lot of potential with tokenization of any financial product for that matter, not only fund units. Yeah. But I think the idea here is to basically have a more global platform that allows for checking of ultimate beneficial ownership records and also other related fund unit characteristics on a digital ledger. And I think that's quite exciting. And of course, it's not so easy to do, right? Because there are many layers that we have to think about. We start from the whole infrastructure aspect and, you know, which blockchain is suitable to do such job, all the way to perhaps some more product specific topics. But yeah, I think that's how I would probably describe it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. But Dan, you just said it right at the very beginning. So let's move into the heart of global tokenization, so to say, i.e. Singapore and why Singapore matters in a particular way, so to say. So from our perspective, particularly from Europe, I would say that Singapore has become one of the most closely watched jurisdictions for tokenization and digitization in general. And could you just let us know what MAS and the so-called Project Guardian have done particularly well, and why does that matter particularly beyond Singapore?
Sure. I mean, I just to be clear, I cannot represent the Singapore Monetary Authority. But I can give you a little bit my view of having been here for a long time and also to some extent interacting with them in several occasions. I think what's quite interesting with Singapore's strategy is that they are not jumping on just any hype topic, but they are what I think I would call very fast followers. So they like to be the fast number two rather than the real innovator, because the risk of failure is obviously a lot smaller once somebody else has explored something in a little bit more detail. So I think that from a strategic angle is probably one of the reasons why Singapore is so successful in digitalization and also in other parts of the economy. Now, with that in mind, I mean, there's also another thing that I find quite fascinating. The Monetary Authority of Singapore is very proactive when it comes to collaboration with the industry. And I don't know whether that's the case in all jurisdictions, but I think they've, from a very early onset of this whole blockchain topic, have started to talk to emerging industry players, obviously trying to assess the risks that are associated with all of this, but then also trying to think about, okay, what can we do with this new technology to improve our existing financial services system? And I think that is driving a lot of these projects, including Project Guardian and then Global Layer One. And I mean, it's called, what is it called again? That platform, I forgot now.
So I think there's Layer One, right?
Is it? Oh yeah. I think these things are, you know, are probably thought leadership in their own, yeah, and on about how you engage with the industry. So that's, yeah, I think.
I suppose that's the same, like with the FEED principles and the Veritas tool and the artificial intelligence layer in Singapore as well. Yeah, very, very insightful, very interesting. Let's quickly look on the product dimension, so to say. Mm. When we talk about fund tokenization, it used to be the starting point is always, or most of the time, the tokenized money market funds, which are deemed to be the simply the easiest way of tokenizing funds, or the entry ticket in this. So what is your opinion, also from a Singaporean view? Are those money market tokenized fund share classes becoming solely the bridge product that could make broader fund tokenization of other types of funds commercially viable?
Mm. So, I mean, this is an interesting question. I think if we take a step back, there's another question actually that kind of is relevant in this context. And that is, why should we even bother to do this whole tokenization topic, right? Well, why should a fund manager even look at it? And then, of course, one of the arguments that fly around in the internet and in social media is that, you can unlock some liquidity that was, you know, I don't know where it would come from, but people talk a lot about this unlock of liquidity. I personally think that is maybe not the main deal here. And in fact, when we wrote our security token paper in almost 7 years ago, or 6 or 7 years ago, we realized that, secondary market liquidity doesn't really show up just because you tokenize something. But what I think is much more interesting is that even the very, very senior leaders of traditional finance, whether it's the CEOs of JP Morgan and Standard Chartered and all these other firms, all of them basically agree that the entire backbone of finance might eventually be tokenized. So my main argument for tokenization at this stage is perhaps not a commercial one in the very short term, but one where if you are a fund manager, you don't really want to be left behind and then miss out on this opportunity of participating in the revamped version of financial services. So understanding how tokenization works, how to interact with the blockchain, what kind of guardrails you need, what kind of controls you need, what kind of governance is probably required. These things we can now all learn together during proof of concept kind of mechanisms, maybe during product launches that focus on very simple products like money market funds. Because eventually, if all these leaders are right, then all of the financial products will be tokenized. And if you then start to learn about it, well, then it's probably already too late.
Sure. Let's dig on this particular point a little bit deeper and under the umbrella, so to say, where the real value of tokenization actually is. So when in my impression from talks with industry leaders and companies, et cetera, even investors, when people talk at the moment about tokenized funds, they usually kind of straight jump into actual distribution issues, right? Or settlement clearing, et cetera, et cetera. When it comes to distribution, so what is your view on all this? So where's the real efficiency price, so to say, today? Is it the issuance process or the transfer agency? Is it settlement, which is kind of critical, so to say, or collateral use? Is it secondary trading? So where do you feel is real value in it?
I mean, I look at I worked in technology for a long time, right, on the sell side, but then also have some exposure to buy side. And my impression is that traditional financial institutions really have a spaghetti of IT systems. And sometimes, that also drives cost income ratios up and so on. So I think for many intermediaries, I think the real opportunity might actually be to have a solution that removes the requirement for additional reconciliation. Because if you think about how much data reconciliation is required in a sort of spaghetti setup of, I don't know, how many hundreds of systems sometimes, if you're a big fund manager. And I think that is probably one of the one of the key issues. I mean, so many years we've tried to create data lakes and, you know, consolidated information about transactions at the fund level, at the securities level, and it's all not perfect, right? So my view is, okay, maybe with tokenization, at least the ultimate data source, the ultimate source of truth is a single one, albeit distributed one. And so I think there's some efficiency gains to be had there. Now, is that in the ideologically in was that in the minds of the people who created blockchains? Probably not. But maybe that's also not so relevant anymore today. Huh? We're dealing with a regulated financial services system anyway. We might as well see where we can get those efficiency gains.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So you just said it. The world is not perfect in that sense. So let's try to educate that a little bit, and because non-perfection sometimes derives from misperception. So in your perspective, what is the biggest misconception actual asset managers still have about tokenizing fund shares?
Wow, that's an interesting one. I mean, I would have said the maybe they are made to believe that the liquidity just comes by tokenizing. So I would actually still call that one out and say that's probably the most prominent one. I mean, let's also be fair and understand that the handling of blockchain-based financial instruments is not something that you can just implement overnight, right? So ideally, you also need partners that help you and try to make that journey a little bit easier. So it's not something that you can just switch on overnight. Maybe sometimes people have the impression that that can be much faster than it actually takes eventually. I mean, that's from my experience with working with different institutions. Yeah.
That leads us perfectly to the current pitfalls associated with tokenizing funds. So when I have such a brilliant guest sitting more or less as an academic at the intellectual building blocks of blockchain and fund tokenization on the one hand, but also a practitioner basically evolving into those projects, then where do you see projects currently get stuck in practice? Is it rather the legal structuring side? Is it the KYC and AML related investor onboarding processes? Is it about documentation, minutiaing, interoperability, et cetera, So what is your key takeaway for our listeners in that regard?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are two kind of connected topics that I think are really big hurdles. The one is that we still lack a solid and global infrastructure for identifying entities, whether that is individuals or in fact corporates. You have some very interesting developments similar to the one in Singapore, for example, where you have SingPass, which sorts out a lot of that at the national level. In fact, I just onboarded to a fund manager on my app while I was on the way back home, and you know, it authorized everything, and that was fantastic. But I think to emerge solutions like that with the global blockchain ecosystem is obviously the next step, and I think so. Identity management is really a big concern. Then I think the second one is really choosing the right blockchain platform. I think so far many asset managers have really not looked at the distinct capabilities or characteristics of blockchains when choosing where to tokenize. And they might have often just said, let's just go with the biggest one. Let's just do what everyone else does, right? But then these choices are really important if you're talking about the ultimate source of truth for a fund unit, right? And I would argue that perhaps some platforms are not as suitable as we might think. In my other book, I have a whole chapter on this topic, but just to call out one thing, I mean, I think it's quite important to have some sort of privacy enhancing capabilities on the blockchain level, because probably the people who eventually hold these fund units do not want to make that information public and queryable for everyone in the world, right? So choosing a blockchain platform that enables you to preserve the privacy of the fund unit holders or the clients is also quite important.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. Dan, although we're just running already to the finishing line of today's episode, there are still two questions left. I'm extremely keen on asking you, and I'm extremely happy about the answer, and my listeners indeed as well. So the one thing, and that is what I was thinking on a couple of days already prior to our recording, which also, you know, circles around the current pitfalls. So from your perspective, how important do you feel is the settlement layer at the moment? So will tokenized funds in some respect remain a niche until regulated settlement assets, stable coins, central bank, linked cash, e-money, et cetera, and that entire infrastructure becomes more usable? What is your what is your impression on that one?
I mean, I think settlement is complicated, right? On blockchains, we have basically probabilistic settlement. And in finance, we like finality, right? And these things are basically at the opposing ends of the spectrum, if you think about it. If I'm not mistaken, just yesterday, Vitalik, the founder of Ethereum, came out and said, oh, we have something now that looks a little bit more like finality. Maybe it's not good enough for all use cases. But you could still argue that finality is probably one of those core requirements or something that people in finance really like. In fact, the word finance comes from finality. I don't know whether you knew that, but I learned it relatively late. So this is really important. And I think that is kind of on the lowest level. And then, of course, to have other things, for example, a digital cash equivalent, whether it is a CBDC type or whether it's a stablecoin type or some other, I don't know, deposit token based type, is also very important. And all of these things are moving, and all of them are moving in slightly different directions. So I could see that it might take a while before we have really huge adoption. But that doesn't mean that it's not the right time now to investigate more and to learn more. Because if you build your base and you have some experience with tokenization, probably you can react faster than somebody who starts much later in the game.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much, Dan. Let's finish off with one last question from my end, given that I introduced our today's episode with From Asia to the World. So let's try to look through the global lens in some respect. Also, maybe as a cliffhanger to expand discussions on that topic beyond this podcast. So, Dan, in your direction, looking beyond Singapore, what do you feel for markets in Southeast Asia that are most interesting at the moment? And where do you see for fund tokenization any particular structural bottlenecks?
I mean, I think, let me start with the bottlenecks. There's this perception that China is really not very much interested in tokenization. And I think it would be fair to say that probably they will not want to be seen to drive innovation in that space. But when I went to the Financial Street Forum a few months ago in Beijing, I mean, there's lots and lots of conversations with government officials in the room, by the way, about tokenization, the applications of stable coins, and how basically the financial ecosystem can be reinvented with the use of digital ledgers. And so, I mean, that's kind of one to watch, I think. Otherwise, in Asia, of course, you can never disregard anything that is happening in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is, I would say, the biggest sort of markets hub in that sense. And there's lots of attention, both from the SFC, also from the MA, and then also from the exchange to drive different initiatives. So I think that would also be something that I would keep a close eye on if I was living in another part other than Asia.
Dan, a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It was really interesting.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was Funds in 15 Minutes, this time with Daniel Liebau on Next Operating System for Funds, Tokenization from Asia to the World. Tune in for our next episodes in the future, and thank you for listening.
This podcast is for informational purposes only. The content discussed does not constitute investment advice, a recommendation, or an offer to buy or sell units or shares in investment funds. Please make investment decisions solely on the basis of the official offering documents.